This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 139. It's all about the rings, baby. Hello, this is Michael Martin coming to you once again for GamesAtWork.biz. It is a beautiful North Carolina spring day, because it's still spring. It's not summer yet. And I'm joined by my fabulous co-host, co-founder, co-extraordinaire, Michael Rowe. Hey, Michael.
Woohoo! Hey, Michael. And, you know, it's a fabulous day, but darn, it's hot. It's going to be in the mid-90s today.
That's not spring.
That's summer.
It is summer, but, you know, we've had a nice spring this year, and but we should enjoy even the mornings, which are spring-ish, and then they get to be summer-ish thereafter.
Yep.
We have got a fantastic show for you guys with some very interesting bits and bobs that we've found in the last week and change, and we're always looking for your insight, too. We got some really nice feedback around the Internet of Things that we've been on these days, and this time around, it's no exception. We have an Olympic-themed one, and no, we're not talking about the five Olympic rings or the nine rings for mortal men or the three.
The one ring to bind them.
The one ring to buy them. Maybe that's a better show title, actually. The Visa team has created a near-field communications mobile payment system for Olympic athletes who require...
It's easy for you to say.
Yeah, well, I probably should say it again because I botched it just a bit. But they need to be walking around the Olympic Village, you know, swatting mosquitoes, and they need to have something that they can authenticate and pay with. And the team from Visa came up with a ring.
Yes.
And Michael, you found this link. So what's your thought on it? You know, what do you think is special about this ring? And do you think this ring will have legs, so to speak?
Yeah, I actually thought it was really cool because when you think about it from an athletic perspective, you're not going to be carrying a bunch of junk around with you. The ring would have minimal impact from any performance that you're doing, whether it's swimming or running or whatever. And the fact that it could be used for payment all around the facility for the athletes means that it's something they can deal with quite nicely. And I think it's a much better implementation of an NFC ring than, as we discussed last week, the commitment ring or whatever it was called, because that seemed like they were really stretching hard to make it something valuable. And this seems like it is valuable right out of the box.
Well, it is. But if you know swimmers like I know swimmers, they want nothing that is causing any drag whatsoever on their body. So I would imagine that even though they could be in the pool, if they're in the pool relaxing, that'd be one thing. If they're competing, I would seriously doubt you would see swimmers competing with rings and other things on their body.
True. And as someone who used to swim competitively when I was much younger.
Did you?
Yes. I never got to the point because I wasn't that level yet. It was elementary school. But I never got to the point of shaving head to toe. and when you think about that, I knew some friends who did that as they kept competing into high school, right, into college and stuff. And, you know, that's why they have body suits now.
Yes.
And you can put gloves on, right? You could have special gloves that cover up the ring.
Webbed gloves.
See, that would be competing and cheating if you had web gloves.
Yeah, you're right. So I was thinking about this and the security aspects of it as well. So, you know, we know from the Apple Watch protocol that the near field, or not near field, but the payment Bluetooth mechanisms and Bluetooth low energy and the security of the watch itself is not enabled unless you put the watch on and enter a code, which is kind of the old tech way, or you put the watch on and you unlock your phone to which your watch is paired, which then unlocks the watch and allows you to go on a run and pay for something with just the watch while you're on the run. I would imagine you'd want to do something very similar for the ring, that there would be some sort of sensor to recognize it's on a body and that the payment system is only enabled after the authentication process takes place, which could be something very similar to what the Apple Watch and iPhone pairing structure do. The article doesn't say anything about this, but I would imagine that you'd want to have some level of security here too, so that you wouldn't have someone's ring get pilfered and then they rack up a bunch of charges down at the Olympic fan store or something.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when you were talking about they're not going to wear it while they swim. Their coach takes it from them and runs away real quick and buys a car.
A brand new car. So yes. Very cool. This is a great article. Yeah,
it is really cool. And what I was impressed by was, like I said, just the whole concept on it and leveraging it in an environment where having minimal stuff to carry with you and having a secure transaction mechanism made a lot of sense. So we'll obviously put that in the show notes, the links, as well as there's an article on Business Wire that goes a little bit deeper than the article from TechCrunch.
Okay. Well, cool. Very cool. All right. Well, let's shift gears just a bit to go little AR, right? We'll go from payment systems to augmented reality. So we have a link here also from TechCrunch, is our favorite site for this show, looking at a company called Occipital, who purchased a company called Replica Labs, which takes your iPad and makes it essentially a 3D scanner to bring models of your environment into the virtual world. So you can walk around your room and create a virtual world of your room in moments.
Yeah, this was really cool. And I seem to remember that I've seen this device. I think it was at Macworld a couple of years back, now that they're no longer in existence. Macworld, the conference, not the magazine. Mm-hmm. Anyway, mm-hmm. And it's a physical device that you attach to the back of an iPad, and it provides that stereoscopic vision in order to get the depth and the 3D feel of objects. And what I really liked was the use case that they had, where one person's at a store, they scan in Endtable, and then the other person uses augmented reality to place it in-world at their house to say, yeah, that fits nicely, it goes right there next to the couch, etc.
And, you know, this is pretty cool. They weren't showing the sensor so much as just the imagery of how the room could be scanned in. So the picture here is of a couch, which is mapped and brought into the environment. And the use case that the TechCrunch article talks about is, hey, how would you like to see how a piece of furniture might look in, you know, that corner of the room? And begin to superimpose that. So I guess it's a little bit more VR than AR in that sense. But they're talking about AR here. So why are they talking so much about AR when this is virtual reality?
Well, it's both, right? Because you have on the receiving end, I'm at home. I can hold up the iPad and see through the camera the placement of the device that you scanned in from the store. Mm. So that's the augmented reality part.
I guess so. I mean, so I struggle a little bit with that, because to me, augmented reality certainly is looking at the real world and having something else superimposed on it. So, you know, the rabbit on the couch is an example of that. And yes, it's true that you see that by looking through a handheld device like a phone or a tablet, but it feels to me a little bit more like the AR aspect is something that is much more real, much more live when you don't have a device in the way.
Well, you got to have a device in the way, whether it's the HoloLens, Google Glass, or something over your eyes. And for the average person, they're not going to spend an extra, you know, $1,000, $1,500 for that type of thing. They'll have their phone or they'll have their tablet and they'll be able to project it that way.
Yeah, I'm with you. But to me, that's maybe there's a better definition or someone's come up with a better definition of this about where does virtual reality end and augmented reality begin. Wearing a pair of glasses that you can see through and see the real world for what it is without having a camera interpret what you're seeing and then superimpose that back on you, to me is part of that spectrum where I would say you're more on the AR side if you have no change to the light entering your eye, but something superimposed on it. So you have transparent glasses with something that is now like a head-up display or something of that nature changing and augmenting the reality versus having an Oculus type device, which blacks out everything. You're wearing the black ski goggles on your face, which again, very cool stuff. Don't get me wrong, but everything that you see has been reinterpreted by computers, superimposing other things on top of them.
Yeah.
So
I think we're still early, but it's starting to show use cases that make sense. And like I said, don't require this huge investment to get started with. If you remember, our very first augmented reality app that we played with, gosh, 6-7 years ago, I think now, was a map for restaurants or something like that. You would hold up your iPhone, look at the map, or look through a screen that just showed the real world, and in the distance it would put little bubbles over interesting right. points of interest.
Yeah, I'm just pulling it up on my phone right now. The app has renamed itself a couple of times. It's now Augmented Reality USA. So I've just turned
well,
it on
that's
for
an
the
original
first
name.
Time. Yeah, I've just turned it on for the first time in a long time, and yeah, wouldn't you know it, it's not doing an awful lot on my phone. Let's try it again, shall we? You're right. It was something that you were
reality.
So activate settings, plain nothing doing. So I wonder if it's now defunct. It did exactly like you said. You would look through your phone, and it would kind of give you points of interest or information about the buildings you were looking at, or you know where you could go to find something off in the distance, and you would kind of look at your phone. And to me, that's sort of like just asking for somebody to come around and say, "Oh, I'll take that phone. Thank you."
It's a very nice phone. Maybe take that.
It's very nice. Not many people are going to be walking around with a phone at arm's length looking through the phone.
No, they do that with an iPad.
or an iPad, for that matter.
They're tourists walking around with an iPad Pro 12-inch going down the street going, whoa.
So I'm reminded as we kind of go through this here a little bit, too, about the other startup in this space called Magic Leap. And I hadn't thought about it for a while. But the Magic Leap structure was one of where you could you will see that combination of the real world and superimposed elements on it, like a video screen or like a dinosaur or whatever, right there through it, and in a amazing 3D structure that you can walk around, and the system is rendering it as you would see that physical object, which we know is not really there.
Right.
And it's been a while since I've looked at this. Have you thought about this or looked at it recently?
Yeah, not closely. I'm looking at their blog right now, and their last blog entry was February.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a huge amount of hype about them when they first launched in stealth mode. But I'm not seeing much about them recently. Maybe they're in the point where they're actually doing work now and not just building hype.
It could be. I'm just kind of scanning through an MIT Technology Review article on it. And do you remember the one where like there's a video there somewhere where somebody had held out their hand and they had like a little baby elephant in their hand? Yeah, that's the one I kind of remember too. So
they have a really cool video on their site where people are watching a basketball game, and midway through the game, a giant whale splashes onto the court, and water goes everywhere.
Excuse me. That's just way too funny. And could potentially distracting to the basketball players too.
Maybe. If they're all wearing augmented reality glasses.
If they weren't wearing augmented reality glasses, then it would.
I remember what was unique about Magic Leap. Magic Leap idea was not to have glasses, but to have something that shined lasers into your eyes to make you see the augmented reality thing.
Yeah, that was it.
Shining lasers into your eyes is always a good idea, right?
What could be more fun than that? All right, well, we had a couple of interesting ideas, you know, thinking about virtual reality, spectrum of virtual to augmented reality, more Internet of Things that we're seeing, how the technology can be used for practical purposes, lots more in this space. You know, Michael, I need to send you a picture of my experience at Lowe's for the Google Cardboard example for how to you could design your new bathroom or something like that, too. Lots going on. Cool. But as we wrap, what are you playing these days?
Okay, so I found a little bit of time to pick up a new game. I don't think we've talked about this one before. It's called Star Trek Timelines. I've not paid for any of it because it's trying to do the pay freemium model. But it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It munges together all the different Star Trek TV shows because a timeline thing has caused and ripped the space-time continuum, and you have Riker being a bad guy and Kirk fighting the Romulans together with the whatevers, right? So it's kind of interesting. It has two mechanisms. One of them's kind of like a card game where you kind of strategize which characters come together with certain skills to go through a series of events, and the other is a space battle, and it's kind of fun. I'll probably burn out on it pretty quick.
That does sound kind of fun. I'm playing something that I found kind of as a whim. You know, you open up iTunes, have a look through what's out there. This game is called Hungry Shark, and Jaws. Yeah, not Hungry Hippo, but with Jaws looming large once more on the big screen, there's an influx of shark games, and so this one caught my eye. And in this game, you play the role of I bet you can guess, and you swim around and you eat fish, and some fish are pokey and spiny, and you can't eat them, and some crabs will bite you, and some other sharks will try to eat you too, and it's a kind of a fun fun game to go around. But I will tell you, I'm really enjoying the Slither.io, and there was an update to that game just today that I'm eager to check out and see how that's working too.
So very cool.
That's I'll what I'm playing.
Well, great. We appreciate right. everybody's feedback from the last show, and we look forward to more of your feedback over at gamesatwork.biz.
See ya, everybody.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.